things get a little bit grim.
But this is especially heinous.
Did you tell the police that she was murdered, May?
Nope.
Witchy ghost stuff.
Ah! That made me scared.
A spooky girl amateur hour.
Tequila night.
Oh, don't talk about tequila night.
I hate to bring it up, but it is something that, like, ever lives in my brain. That it's something that we did.
And survived. Barely.
Your bathrooms didn't survive.
No. It is a miracle we did not get fired the next day.
Oh my God.
A straight up miracle.
How did I end up throwing up in both of your bathrooms?
I don't remember that.
I
don't remember that. I didn't throw up that night. It was all the next day.
Next day.
And it was at work. And it's fine. I have never
done it again.
No, I did do it once.
Okay.
Again, unfortunately.
Just making sure we learned our lesson.
Yeah. But it wasn't tequila the second night. It was Sauvignon Blanc, which I will still drink. But okay. That was a lot. But I very vividly remember putting like peppermint oil on my neck and on my head, thinking, because it's supposed to help with nausea. And I was just like hoping. And I was like, this is not a job for essential oils.
This is a job for charcoal and a stomach pump.
Yes.
Peppermint oil is not going to make a dent.
No. The last thing I remember is us laying in my bathroom and one of us, I don't remember who, being like, I'm just worried I'm not going to find somebody who loves me as much as I love you. That's all I remember. And then we left our third friend just out in the living room.
I forgot.
Oh, Skylar.
There was a third person there.
That poor girl didn't know.
Who also had to go have her husband come get her.
Yeah.
But she didn't throw up.
No. But we continued to drink after she left.
Yes, we did.
So, PSA.
Don't mix absinthe and tequila.
Was there absinthe there?
We started with absinthe.
What?
Yeah.
I remember thinking like, ooh, this is going to be so fun. I cut up limes. I brought my salt shaker outside. We were on my patio. We had our bottle of tequila.
We were just
mixers.
No. We were just trying to have a Taco Tuesday. It was a Tuesday.
It was a Tuesday. We did not have tacos. No. We just had tequila. We did not eat dinner, Jenny.
No, we didn't.
Because we were 22 years old.
I brought a bottle of half-drank absinthe with me to your house.
I forgot. Yep.
Yeah.
That was the thing that happened.
Mm-hmm.
Lord help us. It's a miracle. At least we weren't out.
We knew. We were too old to be doing what we did. But we were old enough to know not to do it out in the clubs.
Yeah, no. We were in my house.
Yes. Thank God.
Thank God. It's our only saving grace. Would 0% recommend.
Oh my God. Tequila night.
But we'll still drink tequila on a good day.
Every once in a blue moon, I can get Taylor to take a snake bite.
Oh, yeah. It's got to be a celebration. That should be one of our goals.
Oh, a snake. Taylor and I, you see. Taylor and
what
I. What happened was this. Taylor and I just spent an hour.
Yep.
Eating pizza and setting goals.
For our little baby podcast.
Which is a little bit grim.
Which you found here.
You're listening to it right now. It's us. That's Taylor.
That's Jenny over there.
Hi. We don't like tequila. Well, we like tequila.
We do, and that's the problem.
Our body doesn't like tequila.
Yeah.
We're
too old for tequila.
We're withering, Jenny, on the vine.
We're too old for tequila.
We're too old for tequila. That's a young man's game.
I remember the last time I think I did a tequila shot was after an award ceremony we both went to.
Yeah.
And I have told people, like, I won't do tequila shots unless I know I have a ride home.
Yep.
And it's, like, nearing the end of the night. I'm, like, not trying to stay out longer. And
no.
We did our tequila shot and my boss happened to be there and his head whipped around so fast and was like, oh no.
Oh, it's one of those.
And this award ceremony is like a black tie event.
Yeah.
So Jenny and I are at a dirty bar in Fort Wayne.
Because that's the only kind of bars we like. We like shitty dive bars.
Yeah, absolutely.
So here we are, dressed up to the night, full gown.
Gown. I have sequins. In a floor-length maroon gown.
Yeah.
Jenny is in a black beautiful low cut
little black number little
thing
that I keep on hand.
And we just decided to shoot tequila shots at the bar. And I immediately put my glass down and was like, I'm going home.
We left a very fancy black tie affair with 500 people and proceeded to go to the dingiest dive bar our city has to offer and drink Bud Lights and tequila. Because that's how we get down.
That's my favorite night.
If you cannot drink Bud Light in a ball gown, we don't vibe.
You gotta be a duality. That's what we love. We love a duality.
We love a balance. Get you a girl who can do both.
Yeah, that's why we are the Scorpio and the Libra. Like, we are the duality of the zodiac sign, I think.
Yeah, the yin and the yang. It's why we work.
Get on board.
Oh, we love it all for you. It's like a cult, almost.
Kind of. It's cultish.
It's cultish.
Cultish which is adjacent.
Which is fantastic.
Because it's a cult episode.
Welcome.
Yay. Hello, hello.
Everybody clap in unison. Oh.
That was not in unison. I'm not musically inclined. I can't clap on anything.
I love it. Oh my gosh. Well, hi. How are you? Are you well?
I am doing just fine. I'm full of pizza and I have a white claw in true fashion of everything we've been talking about.
A white claw?
A white claw.
Which is a stiff drink for us now in our old age.
Yeah, we are now on the 30 side of things, Jenny, and we crack when we like stand and stuff.
I had to start looking at retinoid creams.
Oh, great.
I love it.
I love that. I can't get the wrinkles from the corners of my eyes to, like, go away.
They don't anymore.
And I don't think that at this point I'm going to be able to make that happen. So.
Not without a syringe. I mean, you can make them go away.
That's true. That's true.
If they really are bugging you.
They are. Indeed.
I want Botox so bad. I swear I
would. I would. In my... If I could do my eyes, I would. But I don't have, like, the crow's feet don't bother me. Like, the laugh lines, those don't bother me. It's the ones that are, like, at the inner corner of my eye. Those bother me. And I'm in a constant state of surprise. My life has been very surprising. So I have the three lines in your forehead when you lift your eyebrows too high.
Yeah.
That are just permanent.
My mom calls those her Wi-Fi signals.
Yes!
She started getting Botox at like 76.
I love your God, mom.
She lives.
She got her eyebrows microbladed.
Yes, she did. And she's got hoes in different area codes. She does not play around.
It's my favorite.
Oh my God, she's a dream. Anyway, welcome. Here we are trying to circle back. We're so sidetracked today.
So easily.
Oh my goodness.
But it's your turn to start first.
It is my turn to start first.
I'm so excited. What are you going to tell me today?
Okay, this is weird.
Is it?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's a weird one.
Can you be a normal cult though?
No, I don't think I've done a regular ass cult in like quite a while.
Okay.
Quite a while. This, okay. So most of this is from Food and Wine magazine and one badass journalist who accidentally stumbled upon this cult that was operating in complete secrecy behind a major corporation.
What?
And this just happened.
Shut up.
Okay.
I'm so excited.
Trigger warning.
Oh, no.
We've got a real weird brand of racism.
Oh.
Eugenics.
Oh.
General cult stuff. And if you enjoy a cup of tea, like the drink, not like hot gossip, I'm about to ruin something that you probably have in your cabinet.
Oh, no.
Like, if you have ever had tea, you have had this tea.
Okay.
And I am sorry in advance because you're going to have to throw it out now. Okay. I'm so sorry.
Okay. All right. I'm prepared. Okay. I'm ready to throw away my tea.
Are you ready for my thesis statement?
I'm born ready. I've never been more ready.
On grocery shelves across the country, adorned with perhaps the least intimidating bear ever, sit seemingly innocent boxes of Sleepy Time tea.
No. Jenny? Yeah. No.
Mm-hmm.
No.
I'm going to ruin it. I'm sorry.
I don't have a perfectly good box of Sleepy Time peppermint tea at home.
You're going to have to throw it away.
I'm so sorry.
There's other...
All right. Well, go ahead and start looking now. Like, I need a recommendation for peppermint caffeine-free tea.
I got you.
Put them in my DMs.
Okay. Somebody help Taylor.
SOS.
And do some research for yourself because I'm so sorry. I hated it too. I had to throw mine away. I'm sorry. Okay. Made by Celestial Seasonings, which is part of the conglomerate Hanes Celestial Group. Sleepy Time Tea is the company's bestseller and has contributed vastly to 2020's approximately $750 million in sales.
Wow.
This past winter, writer Megan Giller detailed the bizarre origins of this beloved product in the online magazine Van Winkle's. If you think you know Sleepy Time, you are sorely mistaken.
Great.
As the company's website says, this new product, quote, helped turn our cottage industry into a near overnight success. This is the official history that Celestial Seasonings wants the public to know. And then there's the history that Giller accidentally uncovered.
Uh-oh.
Ooh. Before Sleepy Time became the crown jewel of Celestial Seasonings with 1.6 billion cups sold per year, and before the company became the largest tea manufacturer in North America, the tea was nothing more than a dream in the heads of a few flower children hiking up the Rocky Mountains in search of herbs.
Herbs.
Herbs. One of the friends, Mo Siegel, was serving an Asian herbal tea to customers in a local shop to much success in 1969. The concept that tea could be herbal was innovative in itself, because up until this point, all tea in America and Great Britain was made of the plant Camellia sinensis.
Okay.
So it was all chamomile tea.
Okay.
Basically. And the group wanted to get into the business. The company was founded in 1969 by several Colorado hikers who discovered that the Rockies were full of aromatic herbs that make delicious tea. On those first hikes, the team harvested enough herbs for 500 pounds of a blend they call Moe's 36 Herb Tea. And the sleep conjuring tea made of chamomile, spearmint, and other herbs soon followed. In no time, the friends were sauntering into the local bank to get a loan for their new business. Quote, wearing jeans, smelling of herbs, and armed with Tupperware containers of Moe's 36 and Sleepy Time blends. They called their company Celestial Seasonings after the co-founder, Lucinda Zeising's flower name.
Aw, cute, right?
But there might be another reason they named it Celestial. Moe Siegel and John Hay, two of the founders, were avid believers in a New Age Bible called the Urantia Book, which followers call, quote, an apocryphal revelation authored solely by celestial beings. First published in 1955, the Bible is inspired by Seventh-day Adventist movement, except that it was supposedly communicated to an unknown man possessed and put into a trance by aliens. Yes, aliens.
Huh.
Giller explains that it was more likely written by William Sadler, a turn-of-the-century psychiatrist who also published three books about eugenics and had a deeply rooted racist philosophy.
Oh, no.
The central idea...
Idea.
The central idea of this...
Ideas and herbs.
Really struggling with my mouth today. The idea of this particular religious text revolves around the idea that there are many different sons of God who live on many different planets in a galaxy that consists of many billions of worlds. According to their belief system, our world is just one of the billions, and it's called Urantia. While this seems tame, Giller calls attention to some of the thoughts that are buried deep in the book, one that she calls some of the most racist ideas I've read in a long time.
Oh, God.
According to Urantia's text, a half a million years ago, six colored races existed on our planet. Red, orange, yellow, green, blue, and indigo.
That's the rainbow.
I know. That is correct. Yes. Okay. They left out violet, but they almost had it.
That's the rainbow.
Close.
Okay.
Again, according to the text, there was a racial superiority order, with the indigo race at the bottom in which, as it notes, the blue man subdues the indigo. It oddly states that strains of giantism can appear in green and orange people.
What?
Uh-huh.
Okay, giants can be green and orange.
Yes. And indigos are at the bottom of the food chain.
Okay.
And Just hang in there. I know, it's so weird.
I feel like I'm reading some weirdo story, like, it sounds, fairy tale.
It sounds like a future dystopian, like, it sounds like Margaret Atwood. Like,
yeah,
it's so,
yeah,
bizarre.
It's like Divergent, they all got separated into their,
yes,
pseudo Hogwarts houses.
Hunger Games. The districts.
I'm fascinated.
It's so weird.
I do think that this is what our society is going to go to. But
I hope we all turn like red, green, blue, yellow, orange, and
indigo.
The upshot of all of this is that on every planet in every universe, fair-skinned, blue-eyed aliens named Adam and Eve come and upstep the natives, meaning that they eliminate the, quote, inferior stocks and purify the planet. Giller says about her research, there were so many instances of racism and very strange beliefs in the book that it was really hard to narrow down what I wanted to include in the article. It's worth noting that Siegel himself seems to have been on both sides of these topics. He didn't provide comment to Giller, so she relied on a piece he co-wrote called The 20 Most Asked Questions.
Okay.
In it, Siegel wrote, belonging to any particular race provides no spiritual advantage or disadvantage. All persons are equal in the sight of God. But he also writes, at the present time, mankind loses about as much progress as it makes by ignoring eugenics.
Blech. No, thanks.
No, thank you.
We're out.
I think we should continue to ignore eugenics.
I agree.
In 1969, the same year he co-founded Celestial Seasoning, Siegel discovered the Urantia book. He was immediately taken by the ideas and wrote about it in 2006 and said, I was not concerned about who had written it or how it had been written because it was so powerful. Later, he admitted that the book's ideas were the inspiration for the uplifting quotes we print on the side of our tea boxes and on our tea bag tags. Boo.
Pass.
As a former employee told Giller, the Urantia book was a guide for making sure the moral values that underlaid the company at the same time were all kept in check. They wanted to make sure that this giant conglomerate company was ran with the same morals and values that the Urantia book taught.
Okay.
Siegel left the company in 2002, but he remained deeply invested into Urantia. And eventually, Siegel became the president of the Urantia Foundation, a title he still holds to this day. Giller said her article about Celestial Seasonings was not originally supposed to be this scandalous.
Oh, okay.
Visiting Boulder on a trip, she took a free public tour of Celestial Seasonings and became interested in their tea-making process. So she inquired with the company about interviewing their blend master, Charlie Baden, for an article. Her requests, however, were denied.
Interesting.
She said this, I just started doing the research, and from there it kind of just unraveled into this massive, strong story. I imagine they're sorry they didn't just let me do the puff piece. So, in summation, Sleepy Time Tea is ran by a bunch of wackadoos who think that people used to be the colors of the rainbow and that we need to practice eugenics. And now you have to throw your tea out. And I'm very sorry.
Wow.
I'm so sorry.
Well, while you were telling your story, I had to text my aunt, Lucy.
Yeah.
Because I do have a substitution tea company for you.
Oh, okay.
So, it is Kiambethu Tea Farm in Kenya. And I went there. They have very, very good practices. Everything seemed on the up and up, at least from what I could see as a tourist.
Okay.
And they make a maramba tea.
Ooh.
That I would highly recommend. I'm sure that they make more than just caffeinated black tea, but that is what I bought, and I very much enjoy it.
Okay.
So, and it's very affordable. Like, the whole box cost me $1 while I was
there.
Oh
my gosh.
So, I think you can buy it online. I think you can get it on Amazon, but I will link it in the show notes.
Awesome. So, there you go. There's your substitute tea.
Substitute tea for people who don't believe in eugenics.
Oh, God.
Woof.
Have we not?
Did we not learn
that eugenics is a very unpopular concept? And I would be very nervous to not only attach my name, but my entire hundreds of billions of dollar business
to that idea.
To this.
What in the hell?
But you can, like, find little snippets of the book online, and it's it's unreal.
Not great.
It's so deeply unsavory.
We just don't want any part of it.
Yeah. Oh, hold up. Pause.
Yeah.
So speaking of unsavory, I would like to issue a public apology.
Oh, okay.
We did something problematic.
Oh, okay.
I just learned about it.
Oh, did we?
Well, it was my story. So I did something problematic.
Okay.
And I don't know if you've listened to all the episodes. You probably remember the paranormal where I covered a Dybbuk box.
Yeah.
So I found a woman online talking about Dybbuk boxes and how there was no history of them before like 2013. And that they are a concept that was invented by one very charismatic paranormal TV show host.
Oh, no.
That there is no written record of anything like a Dybbuk box. And that Dybbukim aren't a part of historical Jewish mysticism.
Okay.
And this woman is a professor of classic Jewish mysticism. And she said that that rhetoric can be
damaging. Okay.
So, I'm sorry.
We're all learning together.
Listen, we're just trying to do the best that we can.
Right. And even I know that it's rooted in the story that we told is rooted in a Jewish history.
Yes.
If we take that part away from it, a haunted box is still very interesting.
It is.
So,
haunted objects are very
fascinating. And that's just really sad that that was a fabrication. That, you know, I mean, those mm-hmm. of us who are very interested in a paranormal
yeah.
aspect are willing to believe. Because you can't suspend your belief for one thing.
And not, right.
And then believe in the rest of it.
I do believe that boxes can be haunted.
Agreed.
I don't think it's fair to say that it's part of Jewish culture and their mysticism. And I'm not Jewish, so I can't speak on it.
Right.
So, do with that what you will. I apologize if anybody was put off by that story.
Okay.
Anyway.
All
right. Trucking right along.
Right along here. So, my story today is a little bit of a lesser-known cult. I didn't know anything about them, and I found all of my information on thegothamist.com and somebody named Brooke McKenna on YouTube.
Okay.
And I am going to tell you the story of the Sullivanians today.
Okay.
Do you know about them?
I have seen them just like while like trying to figure out like
what cult you're going to do.
Yeah, I've seen them pop up, but I haven't like actually dug into them.
All right. So we are going to go to New York City in the 1970s.
No, I don't want to go there.
Not a great time.
Oh, no, but okay.
All right. So it's New York City in the mid-1970s. And when you think of the 70s, you may think of hippie music. It's the end of the free love era. But in reality, the 1970s in New York was full of crime, gangs, and gritty, pretty shady business practices.
Very urban jungle.
Yes. So when a group of people invited young, impressionable people to live with them and their 200 friends in three apartment buildings in the Upper West Side, it sounded like a pretty good deal.
Sure.
The more people, the more the merrier. And a lot of people were moving to New York to start fresh, and they needed a group of friends and sport. So a lot of these people were just single people, and you get invited to a big, you know, supportive group. You're like,
looking
great.
For friends.
Love that.
Yeah.
This group didn't have a name for themselves, but they would be later known as the Sullivanians.
Okay.
So they didn't, like, go around calling themselves this.
Okay.
A man named Saul B. Newton was born on June 25th, 1906 in St. John, New Brunswick, Canada.
Okay.
He went to a University of Wisconsin, but later moved on to Chicago. In Chicago, he started joining radicals at the University of Chicago, and he served with a Canadian battalion during the Spanish Civil War in the late 1930s, ooh. And then was drafted to the U.S. Army in 1943 for World War II. I was very confused about a Canadian living in the United States serving in the Spanish Civil War.
Yeah.
But it did check out because Canada was involved in the Spanish Civil War and fought on the side of the French.
Okay.
So it all turned out to be correct, but I was like, I'm going to call bullshit on this right here, right now.
too many nations.
Yeah. I was like, meh.
And then he served in the U.S. Army?
Yes.
Okay. I didn't know you could serve for two different militaries.
Well, he was living in the United States.
I guess he got drafted. Did he get drafted?
And it was, yeah, drafted for World War II. After World War II, he went on to study psychotherapy, and he maintained interest in politics and psychology throughout his life.
Okay.
He studied and worked in the William Alanson White Institute of Psychiatry, Psychoanalysis, and Psychology. At the institute, he met a woman named Dr. Jane Pierce, and the two quickly hit it off and were married soon after. They both continued to work at the institute until one of the founders named Henry Stack Sullivan died. And Sullivan believed that personality was based in the cultural forces around you. So his work, he characterized loneliness as the most painful of human experiences. After just reading a very small amount about Sullivan, I am sad that this group ended being called the Sullivanians because they twisted his theories and his ideas to fit their agenda. He had nothing to do with this. They weren't even formed until after he died.
Okay.
So it's just sad that they kind of
drug him,
hijacked his name and
Drug it through the mud.
Yeah. Still, reportedly in his honor, Jane and Saul decided to open the Sullivanian Institute. I'm sorry, the Sullivan Institute for Research in Psychoanalysis in New York City in 1957. Saul believed that the traditional family group was the root of why so many people suffered from mental illness. So it was all because of the traditional nuclear family. He believed that by having an open, polyamorous lifestyle, he could reduce the likelihood of mental illness in the people that participated. So by the 1960s, people were very curious about this group. They weren't really secretive. They were inviting people. They were pretty open about their practices.
It's unusual for a cult.
Yeah, people were just like, this sounds interesting. I might check it out.
Yeah.
They thought that it was a therapy-approved way to live and possibly get rid of their mental illnesses.
Okay. So, I can see why people would flock.
Right. And so the institute actually had therapists, like many therapists. It was a therapy office.
Oh.
And so their patients would come and go who might not actually be involved in the group.
They're just getting treatment.
Just getting treatment there.
Interesting.
But it was still this building full of people who were quote unquote followers of this lifestyle.
Interesting. Okay.
Right.
Okay.
So they were pretty open about it. Yeah.
Okay.
Anyway. Within just a few years, there were several hundred people living at the Institute, which is in the Upper West Side in three separate buildings.
Ugh. Living with 100 people? Can you imagine? I don't even want to live with myself.
No. I lived in a two-bedroom apartment that was 1,300 square feet. That is a lot of square feet for an apartment.
Mm-hmm.
And it was still too small for me and my husband. Can't imagine.
Need separate spaces.
Yeah. That's the key to marriage.
Do your own thing.
Yes, be your own person. There were some people well known who ended up joining the group. Richard Price, who is a whiter. We're both having such struggles with our tongues today. All right, Richard Price, who is a writer, and a singer named Judy Collins were both part of the group.
Oh, Judy Collins?
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah.
That's a big name.
Therapists all over New York City were friends with Saul, and they would actually recommend the Institute to their patients.
Ooh.
So it's like therapists are all just like one big happy family and like recommending each other patients. Like, oh yeah, that guy specializes more in divorce, or this person specializes more in depression. This person is childhood psychology. Mm. So they would just refer each other around. I don't think that's too different from what we see today in therapy. People were just getting recommended to the Institute. At first, it was just a big group of people interested in having a large social life, and they wanted to hang out, have a good time, enjoy the company of their peers who were committed to radical politics, sexual liberation, and this specific brand of psychotherapy. Paul Spreacher.
I'm sorry to interrupt.
No, you're fine.
What do you mean by radical? Which side of the spectrum are we radical on?
I never really found out. They were just anti-police for sure.
Okay.
And they really liked conflict between police. So we'll talk a little bit about it later, but they would create conflicts between people and police in ways that weren't.
What are they, an Aquarius? Sorry.
Probably.
Just kidding.
Not necessarily like things that like they were clearly not in the right.
Yeah.
And being like, ha ha, stand off with the police.
Oh my gosh.
Like,
No.
Kind of hard to justify. And then a lot of just like anti-establishment, anti-nuclear family.
Okay.
Did not love leadership. Didn't really want there to be like government.
This, I'm so sorry. This sounds like a very ironic group of people to get wrapped up in a cult.
Right.
A bunch of therapists get brainwashed.
Uh-huh.
And radicalized.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Keep going.
It's...
Somebody really pulled something big
you,
off here.
You have got to be able to, like, look at your education and be like, something weird's happening.
You don't see
here.
A red flag?
Here, friend?
At nothing?
Nothing.
Okay.
They're just like, yep, sounds good. All right. At first, it was a big group of people, blah, blah, blah. I already said that. Okay. Paul Spreacher was a recent Harvard graduate in 1974.
Smart cookie.
Yeah. He moved to NYC and said, I found this group, and it just so happened that all of them were in Sylvanian therapy. It was this incredibly neat experience for a newcomer in New York City. Suddenly, I had a social life. There were women who wanted to date me. We spent the summer in Amagansett, and it was loose in those days, just people hanging out in apartments.
It was loose? Oh. I don't want to hear a place described as loose.
I like tight places.
I prefer.
Oh, I'm gonna.
Oh wait. We prefer regulated places.
I like places with rules.
Shoot me. You now. Better not cut that out.
Shoot me now.
Leave it in.
All right. Okay. Oh, Jesus, I'm gonna have secondhand embarrassment for myself in the future when I'm editing this. It's fine. The buildings were a part of the institute and part commune. We created a living context like a tiny village that was mostly cut off from the world. The bizarre thing, of course, is that you're in the middle of New York City, but the dynamics of control and so on are like a village. A big part of this group that I've mentioned already is the idea of polyamory. The rules within the group were that you could not date or be committed to just one person. You had to be open about who you were sleeping with, and no one was off limits.
Yee.
Just, like, a good tiny side note is that children were not a part of the, like, equation here.
Outstanding.
So, at least we are all between consenting adults.
Okay.
So...
Are we blurring the lines with consent here, or are they, like, pretty consenting?
For the most part, I think it's pretty consenting. Okay. There will get to be, like, a non-consensual part later, but it doesn't have to do with sex. It has to do with lifestyle.
Okay.
So, as far as sexual relations go, it seems like everyone was very willing.
I love when cults are chill about that.
Right. Like, I love a non-child cult. Like, no child sex involved. In fact, they just sent away the children. They didn't want them.
I'm
not mad.
It's better than the alternative.
Yeah, don't let them live there.
No. You know what that's going to turn into if you have kids.
Yep. So, the therapists, although, would be a part of this sexual looseness. So you as a patient could be having sex with your therapist.
No.
Absolutely no. Not. That is not something we're going to do.
That's transference and that's bad.
We're going to find out a lot very quickly.
Okay.
Okay. So therapists were a part of the group. They were expected to join in the sexual liberation. At some point, Saul and Jane divorce, and Saul goes on to marry a woman named Joan Harvey. Joan was a soap opera actress and stage director. So he went from doctor.
To drama.
To drama. And she is drama.
Okay. She would have to be.
Yeah. She wanted to merge the therapy commune with a politically progressive theater collective called the Fourth Wall.
Mm.
By the mid-1970s, the group was at its height, and as far as membership goes, they were at about 300 people.
Ooh.
However, it was about this time that the Utopian Society starts to see its decline. Of course. Mm. They always do. They were told to cut off all ties to their traditional families unless they needed money.
Ew.
Of course. Money is king, so whatever you needed that, you would just go back to your mom and dad or your aunts and uncles, whoever it was that was a part of your normal family, and ask them to help you out.
Weird.
Yeah.
I feel like therapists get paid a lot of money. So right. Why are they asking their family for funds?
Yeah, they do get paid a lot of money.
Yeah.
And there's more.
Well, okay.
Sexual encounters were now being set up and assigned by therapists.
What?
As a part of therapy.
No.
pass.
What? No. You're not getting anything accomplished.
Nope.
I'm sorry, you're not.
Soon these encounters were happening with multiple partners at one time, and that was not consensual.
Uh-huh.
So it was just, you were just told who you were going to be having sex with that day.
You just get, like, assigned a person?
Yes.
And that's therapy?
Yeah.
That sounds like shitty therapy.
Agreed.
Okay.
0 out of 10 recommend.
How do you bill that to insurance?
What does that code into?
I couldn't tell you.
Okay. If a child was born, which they many were, it would be immediately handed over to caretakers or sent to boarding schools. Mm. So they did not allow children to be a part of the everyday life. Parents, if the child was able to stay in the commune, but it was taken care of by caretakers, the caretakers were not a part of the sexual liberation. They were in a whole separate section.
Okay.
And parents could only visit their children for about an hour a day.
Ew, no.
Yep. Saul would decide who would make children with who. So this kind of goes back to the eugenics.
Yeah.
And I didn't find anything that points to designing a specific type of race, but that was definitely the vibe I was getting, was that there was a point. Therapy was getting more and more brainwashy. Therapists would hold sessions where their patients would bring in pictures of the family, and the therapist would analyze the photo and say, well, it's clear that your family wasn't happy in this photo, or it's clear that you were the least loved of your siblings.
Ugh.
Really gross. As somebody who truly just like hands over my whole heart and soul to my therapist in therapy,
yeah,
to have her look at a family photo and be like, yeah, you're clearly not loved, like, that would crush me.
Yeah.
I can't imagine what these people had to be feeling.
Mm. Mm-mm.
Michael Bray was Paul Spreacher's therapist, and when Spreacher brought a photo of his mother holding him as a child, Michael said, look at your mother, look at the way she's holding you, her contempt for you is obvious.
Ew, shut up.
It's yucky. Michael ends up being part of the destruction of the cult, though.
Okay.
So we're going to
give job, him
a, like, a little pass, but like, ew for commentary.
Yeah.
In 1978, the group signed a lease at the Truck and Warehouse Theater in the East Village. And this was the theater they were going to take over and create the Fourth Wall Theater. The previous theater troupe didn't leave when they were supposed to. Holdover residents.
Oh my god. Stop it. File a writ.
And this really did not sit well with the Sullivanians.
Sure.
Hundreds of Sullivanians decided to head over to the theater to take over by force.
They attempted a coup?
Yes.
At a theater house?
Dramatic.
So unnecessary. Call the city. I'm sorry, go on.
I mean, that's the logical thing.
I'm trying to get bogged down in the details here.
Get in the weeds. They destroyed everything inside of the theater, from sets to props, anything that they could get their hands on.
So annoying.
The police were called, and the group decided to barricade the doors. And Paul Spreacher said that Saul seemed to really like this kind of confrontation. Like I said earlier, he wanted to teach people how to stand up to law enforcement.
Why?
I don't know.
Like, just for fun?
Yeah.
Like, I agree you should stand up to law enforcement when they're acting out of pocket, which is usually.
Right.
But
in this instance, they're just responding to a
call.
A call. Because, like, they beat the shit out of a bunch of people who wouldn't leave this building when they had the rights to it. If we were just like, yeah, we're going to file a lawsuit and wait a couple of weeks, they would get out.
The drama people should have just called the police and been like, yo, they are trespassing on the property.
Right.
Boom.
You kick them out.
God.
No, they decided to go handle it themselves.
Well, okay. Weird mafia moves, but okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Weird. Anyway. So in 1979, the Sullivanians were shaken by an event that occurred at Three Mile Island in Pennsylvania. Three Mile Island is its own, like, disasters episode, which I might get into later, but the very short version is that the Three Mile Island accident was a partial meltdown of reactor number 2 of the Three Mile Island nuclear generating station.
Gross.
And this freaked out Saul. He was not chill about it. And the Sullivanians followed his lead. Because they all believed that the nuclear power plant was about to have a full-on meltdown and that this was going to kill everybody within, like, a bajillion mile radius.
Like Chernobyl style.
Yes. And they thought that they would definitely be affected in New York City. Mm. So the leaders of the group decided to flee New York and head down to Orlando, Florida.
Duh. That's where I'd go.
That's
the butthole of Florida.
Disney World.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Also, Disney World is there. I'm sorry.
The butthole of Florida.
It's right smack dab in the middle.
It is. There were a handful of people who decided not to leave their lives in New York to follow the group to Orlando because they had jobs and they did have other friends outside of the Sullivanians. Yeah. But within a few weeks, the group that decided to flee to Orlando said, oh, yeah, I guess like that's probably not going to explode. So they decided to come home.
Oh, excellent.
Yep. But when they got home, they ostracized the people who...
Not faithful.
Didn't come because they weren't faithful.
Yeah.
They didn't believe in what the leaders were saying.
Oh, my God. But the leaders were wrong.
Exactly.
Okay.
The group was actually fairly wealthy because they had a lot of wealthy members. No, so sure. We had a singer, we had a writer, we had all these therapists. And they made around, or they had around $12 million worth of property all over the place.
That's a lot of money dollars.
Yeah, especially in 1979.
Heck yeah.
And they had designed escape routes. They barricaded some of the locations in steel to protect themselves from the CIA.
What?
They were bananas.
Were they even on the CIA's radar?
No.
Okay.
Sure weren't.
You get a little big for your britches there.
Yes. That's when you know it's a little culty. If you're too concerned about the CIA... You should probably question things.
A little bit culty.
It's true.
Oh, God.
They had motorcycles and school buses on hand. If Why? They needed to get out in the case of an emergency.
What are you going to do with a school bus?
Get everybody out quick.
Go 15
know.
In a school zone.
Yeah, you got your little stop sign. It's crazy.
Put them blinkers on.
Right.
Oh.
The controlling behavior of the leadership increased dramatically at this point, and now therapists were involved in telling people what they could and could not do, and if people didn't follow the rules, they could be fined up to $10,000.
On whose authority?
Are you just going to write me a memo?
Okay. Invoice me, please.
Yeah, for $10,000? Okay. Let's see you collect that in the credit bureau. God.
God, I can't. Okay.
Saul himself started to become more controlling and had violent outbursts when members would not follow his direction. At one point, a few people tried to leave, and Saul sent some of his sons to find them, and they were found at a train station, and the sons dangled them over the edge of the tracks and threatened to kill them if they tried to leave again.
My God.
Yeah.
It's extreme.
It, this entire story went from like, nah, blah, 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 to super extreme in a very short amount of time.
They must have had a bad time in Orlando.
Yeah. They learned some tricks in Orlando is what happened. So the cult was operating in a bubble. While they had erratic behavior and some violent outbursts, they weren't getting much attention. So remember, New York was a super violent place in this era. So a group of hippies wanting to bang each other wasn't really big news.
It's not enough for anybody to
right.
think twice.
No, nobody raised an eyebrow.
Yeah, it's not like people are dying.
Right. Finally, the public found out about what was happening within the group when two ex-members sued the Sullivanians for custody of their children.
What?
Because they were being taken away from them at birth.
Did they sign away their parental rights?
Nope.
Oh. They just didn't have their kids?
Yeah.
What? That's so whack.
Yeah.
Okay.
The two ex-members were Paul Spreacher and Michael Bray, his therapist.
Yeah.
Michael fought for the custody of his 5-year-old twin daughters, and Paul fought for the custody of his 5-year-old son. Parents Against Cult Therapy, or PACT, was created to help prevent this from continuing. The cult finally just kind of dissipated when Saul Newton died in 1991. However, some believe that Joan Harvey still is running the cult from inside her own home to this day.
Gross. Can you imagine how dirty the carpets are in there?
Ugh.
Sorry, I'm sorry.
Some members believe that the group was positive and still hold fond memories. This specific person created a Facebook group and invited a bunch of ex-members, and when the other members started commenting about the negative experiences they had, he just deleted the comments and told them all to create their own group if they were going to be negative about it.
Sounds like a new side cult.
Yes. In fact, when he was asked if he thought the cult would happen again, he said, of course it'll happen again. People want that. People need alternatives.
Alternatives to what? Regular ass therapy?
Yes.
Go to regular ass therapy.
You need it.
Find a therapist that won't bang you.
Yeah.
That.
Start there.
At bare minimum.
Start there.
Frig.
So, at the end of the day, I just wanted to shed light on a cult that wasn't about murder or rape. Not all cults are as violent as we seem to think, especially the cults that I've covered recently have been really, really heinous.
Yes.
This one isn't that way. It's still a cult. It doesn't make it less culty. It's just not quite as
nefarious.
Right. So just still beware. You don't have to see dead bodies on the floor to be in a cult.
No. Anytime you see a red flag, don't try to call it burnt orange. It's a red flag.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just go ahead and go the other way.
Oh, God.
So, yeah, that is a... That's the Sullivanians.
Ugh. I don't like them.
I wasn't a huge fan.
There's only been like one or two cults that we've covered that I'm like, that could get behind it.
Right.
There's one or two.
The Aetherius Society.
Yeah, the Raelians.
The Raelians.
I can...
Honestly, the alien cults seem to be the way to go.
They really do. It's not all peace, love, unity. What is that? Plur. It's been a long time since I went to a rave.
I've never been to a rave. I wasn't cool.
You don't have candy? I also wasn't cool.
Oh. Someday we'll cover Heaven's Gate, but even them, they aren't like that heinous when it came to other people.
Weren't they?
No.
But members of the cult. Weren't those the ones that like they sent a bunch of people down to like Brazil, Heaven's Gate?
Mm.
And there was like child sex stuff or whatever.
I don't think so. They believed in abstinence. They were the ones that like castrated themselves. I'll cover it. Don't worry.
Okay.
About it.
Whoa. You don't just sprinkle that. Like,
sorry. No, they didn't believe in sex at all.
Okay. Ew. That sounds awful. That's definitely not a cult I could get into.
No. Yeah. So they were very, very freaking weird and had a lot of weird ideas, but they weren't dangerous to other people.
Do they have videos and stuff?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. They were the ones that left their videos, like their goodbye statements.
God.
Because they were trying to follow a comet.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
It's all coming back to me now. I got it. I'm with it.
Got it. Cool.
Oh, sorry. Cool. Do you have a bright and shiny?
Yeah, I do.
Okay.
So our favorite band, The Spill Canvas, put out a new single today.
Hey, Nick, we'll tag you.
Hey, bud. I'll tag the picture of us with you in it so you remember who we are.
I'll post the photo that I have of me with him when you wouldn't walk me to the bathroom and you made me go in by myself waiting out back to meet the band. But you know what? The band was in the hallway by the bathroom. And so I met Nick.
I've never been more jealous in my whole life.
You were so bad.
I was so bad.
Anyway, so the Spill Canvas, what are they doing?
Yeah, they released a new song today.
Oh, I love. Is it good?
It's called Molecules. And they released another one, I think it was like last week. It's called Firestorm.
Okay.
They have a new whole ass album coming out. I'm so excited.
Nick and the other members of the band.
I'm so excited.
The ever rotating bass player. I love.
Yeah. I'm so excited. That means that our Spill Canvas concert days are not far behind.
I can't wait for us to go back again to like a live show. I'm so glad we got to do like the VIP last time.
Yeah. It was just a weird show. Like it was the
unplugged. Yeah. It was good though.
It was good. It was just not the normal like kind of grungy.
Yeah.
Rubbing up against sweaty people.
Stomping and jumping.
That's what I like.
This is like a plated. We ordered a charcuterie tray.
Yes.
At a wine bar. It was different.
It was
vibe.
Different. It was great. I love it. Anytime that I can see the Spill Canvas, I'm happy about it.
Yeah, so. Me too.
But that's my bright and shiny.
We can't tell too many people about the Spill Canvas because then they're going to get famous. And then the tickets are going to be more than like $25.
It was like $15 the last time I saw them in Cleveland in a bowling alley.
Did you go alone?
Yeah.
Yeah, I love that. I love that so much.
Listen, they're never in Fort Wayne. They never come here. So
even though Taylor has direct messaged their manager like 6 times on Instagram.
I'm not a stalker. I'm just persistent.
Straight facts, no copy.
They I was in Cleveland. That's where my corporate office is. Mm-hmm. And I knew that there was a Spill Canvas concert that night. And I was just like, I'm going to go. I don't care if nobody can come with me. I'm never within like 15 minutes
of them.
Just like going to a show mm-hmm. and then not having to like pay for my own hotel room and drive home and all that stuff. So I met three lovely girls there and I saw them all talking and I was like, hey, can I be your friend? And they were like, fuck yeah, you can be our friend. And then we talked all night. It was a lot of fun.
Live music is such like a special experience. And I can't wait until we can all be together again so we can go back out and experience that.
Someday. Anyway, what's your bright and shiny?
So I would like to make a motion to substitute my bright and shiny
okay.
for a joke.
Okay.
All right. Do I hear the eyes?
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. Okay, here we go. So a frog walks into a bank.
Yeah. Huh?
And he approaches the counter and he sees that the teller's name is Miss Patricia Whack.
Okay.
And so the frog looks at her and he goes, hello, Miss Whack. Mm-hmm. I am looking to secure a loan for $50,000 for a fantastic luxury vacation.
Okay.
And she said, well, you know, sir, that is quite a large sum of money. And he goes, ah, yes, I know. You see, my name is Kermit Jagger. You might know my father, Mick Jagger. And she was like, well, that's all good and well, sir. However, for a loan for that amount of money, we would need you to put up some kind of collateral. And so the frog winks at her and he goes, I thought you might say that. And he reaches into his frog pocket and he pulls out a tiny porcelain elephant and places it in her hand. Miss Whack, more confused than ever, goes, excuse me, I need to go consult with my manager. So she goes into the back room. She's explaining this whole story. She goes, sir, there's a frog out front. He says he's the son of Mick Jagger. I asked him for collateral for his $50,000 loan, and he gave me this tiny elephant. Do you know what this is? And he looks at the elephant, and he looks at Miss Patricia, and he goes, well, that's a knick-knack, Paddywhack. Give the frog a loan. His old man's a rolling stone.
I hate it.
I'm sorry.
I love it, but I love it and I hate it. I love it and I hate it both.
I'm dead. I'm alive, but I'm dead.
Never be able to stop thinking of Knick Knack Paddywhack, give the dog a bone. Oh my
god. Knick Knack Paddywhack, give the frog alone.
Oh my god.
His
gosh.
Old man's a rolling stone.
Okay.
It's been living in my head for 2 days. I'm just happy to get it out.
I'm happy that the rest of the world also knows about this.
Thank you. That is my bright and shiny.
Great. Good. Cool, cool, cool.
Well, thanks for listening.
If you haven't gotten yourself some merch yet, definitely go over to that store right now.
And check her on out.
And check her on out. We got some cute stuff over there. We might actually have some art up there, too.
Yeah, some exciting stuff in the works. Go to our website. It'll link you directly to the merch, www.alittlebitgrim.com. Feel free to submit your listener stories to us so we can put them on a grab bag episode. We love to hear your ooky, spooky, real life, true crime conspiracy. Your own conspiracy. Have you ever joined a cult, started a cult? We want to know about it.
Absolutely. Let us know.
Follow us on the social meds.
And have yourself a great day.
Be kind to others.
And yourself.
Goodbye.